Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Welcome to show number 142. Coming up on the show today, Dennis's trip to Europe, my trip to Hammond, Indiana, details on a new poker tournament series here in St. Louis, and Bernard Lee, our friend from ESPN's Inside Deal, who recently made a final table of his own at a circuit event at the Horseshoe in southern Indiana. Hello, I am Paul Harrah's, sitting at the feature table in the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, where the live action is surrounding me and the tournaments are going on, and the Bad Beat jackpot is up to $83,500. Meanwhile, my partner Dennis Phillips has made his way to the Horseshoe up in Hammond, Indiana. He is working his way there from a trip to Cannes, France, for the World Series of Poker Europe, and he'll join us in just a couple of minutes. But to start things off, how about a big announcement here in St. Louis about another poker tournament series here in St. Louis? It is the Gateway Poker Classic, and it will take place on the first 11 days of December. Denise Tekowski is the poker room manager here, and you've been working on this for a while. Congratulations on putting it together.
Thank you very much.
It's going to be a very exciting event and some unusual things going on there. But first of all, I think one of the keys for some of our listeners will be that you're going to have smaller buy-ins. This is not going to be just like the circuit event that you have in April, right?
Correct.
Buy-ins will be what?
They'll range from $125 to the main event, which will be $1,100.
Mm-hmm.
We have some variety of events. We have some Omaha events, No Limit Hold'em, some horse events, and a very unique Jack and Jill to open it up.
Yeah, now Dennis is joining us. He finally got to the phone up there in Hammond. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm doing great. Jack and Jill, that sounds cool. What's the structure like for that?
We are going to have, it's got to be male-female, so it's got to be Jack and Jill, not Jack and Jack or Jill and Jill. And it's $125 buy-in per person, and it is a team event. The first 30 minutes, they'll determine on the day of the event if the female plays or if the male plays. We'll give half the starting chip stack to that player. At the end of that round, they'll give the other half or whatever is remaining to the next player, and then they'll switch off every 30 minutes.
So does each team determine if it's the man or the woman who starts, or will somebody flip a coin at the beginning and all the men will start together and all the women will start together?
They'll flip a coin to determine.
For each team or for the whole thing?
For everybody. It'll either be the male start or the female starts.
Okay. So the reason you're breaking it up is so that the guy can't sit down and blow all the chips in the first half hour, and his wife is sitting there going, hey, I didn't get a chance to play.
Exactly. We don't want to be responsible for any divorces.
What do you think of that, Dennis?
Well, it's cool. Now, I assume it's 30-minute levels, so every time a level goes up, basically it's a complete shift. Everybody up, and new players sit down. Is that the way
Correct.
It is then?
Yep, they'll switch
wow.
back and forth. It should be a lot of fun.
Okay. Is there any coaching from the sideline allowed?
That I'm not sure of. Yeah, I would wonder.
When Jack is playing, can Jill tell him what to do or vice versa?
That's
just
exactly.
like at home. Just like at home. Jill always tells Jack what to do, right?
No, but I'm serious. Do you think that the other player has to completely leave the area? I would assume that they're not allowed.
I would assume at the point that they're playing, it's not a team event. It's just when it comes to having the actual chips in play.
Mm-hmm.
So that they'll share the chips and they'll share the play, but I don't think that they can discuss while a hand's in play.
And that $125 buy-in, is that $125 for the man and $125 for the woman? So it's really a $250 team event?
Correct.
That should get a nice little feel going here. That's the first event on Thursday, December 1st. It'll be a 7 o'clock event, so people can come after work and have some dinner together and then come over here to Harrah's St. Louis. And then the next day, you start with the 3:55 event at noon, and there will be noon events every day and 5 o'clock events every day. And then the 7 o'clock events will be each night, and all of the 7 o'clocks will be the $125 buy-ins, right?
Correct.
So after-work specials for a lot of people coming in here. And there will also be a six-handed event going on, and then it all leads up to the championship event, and then you've even got something after that, the ladies event and a turbo event. What will the turbo event be?
When will the turbo?
No, what will it be? Is that like a 10-minute rounds or 5-minute rounds or?
That's still yet to be determined.
Oh, yeah.
So, this is so new. We're working out all the details.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be a tremendous addition to the Harrah's Poker Room schedule. You've got the circuit in April. Now you've got the Gateway Poker Classic coming in December. When can people start registering for this? I mean, we're only here in the middle of October now, but when will sign up begin?
December 1st, that Thursday, the satellites and the registration will begin around noon.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to, pending Missouri Gaming approval, we're going to run some satellites into the main event in the month of November.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look for that towards the end, the latter part of the month.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to probably run satellites the day of December 1st at probably 9 o'clock, I think is what we've got mapped out right now. So 9 a.m., then you can sign up for all the tournaments beginning at noon that day.
And will there be also single table sit-and-goes like there are during the circuit event?
That's what we're planning at this point, yes.
Wow. Sounds great, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I got a couple of other quick questions. On the Jack and Jill one, are you going to have a sign-up sheet in the room, maybe, where people can try to patch up with each other or something?
You know, we've actually had a lot of guys walking around the room scoping out the area, and I don't know if they're necessarily just using this as a team event or a pickup. So that's yet to be determined.
The poker room's turned into a meat market. Hey, baby, how'd you like to be Jill to my Jack?
We're pretty excited. We're hoping to build this event up for year over year, like the WSOP has built momentum.
And by the way, there will be a lot of Omaha in here as well. There's an Omaha High-Low. There's a PLO event. There's a PLO Triple Chance event. There's a Pot Limit High-Low event in there as well. There'll be a seniors event, the ladies event, which I mentioned before. There's going to be something here for everybody. Details will go up on the Harrah's website very soon. And in the meantime, all you got to do is go to the Facebook page for the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room and get all the details there.
Yep, I'll be updating the site on a regular basis as we get information. So if they want to go on the Facebook and like us, they'll have access to everything.
Excellent. All right, thank you very much, Denise.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Denise Tykowski, who's the Poker Room Manager here at Harrah's St. Louis. Pretty cool, huh?
Pretty cool is right. That's awesome. I literally, a wide variety, a wide scope, smaller buy-ins, for everybody to be able to play it, being able to be there local. I love the idea of it. And they got something unique, too. Almost all these tournaments now seem to have something, a little bit of a different twist or whatever. They've got a Jack and Jill one. I've never done a Jack and Jill one.
Yep.
That's awesome.
By the way, while we're plugging stuff for Harrah's St. Louis, let me also plug that this Saturday is another day for the 10K double shootout. That's that $200 entry. Win your table, go to the final table, win the final table, get a guaranteed $10,000. There'll be a noon flight and a 3 p.m. flight this Saturday, and they're doing it again also on Sunday the 30th, which will be right after our weekend of the big game, the 15K buy-in cash game that's going on the last weekend of October. So there's lots of stuff going on here at Harrah's St. Louis, and we're happy to call it our casino home here in our hometown. Now, let's talk about you going out of town, Dennis, to Cannes, France, for the WSOPE. You were in London for the EPT, and then you went on to Cannes for the WSOPE. Did you play in a bunch of events? I know you couldn't have been in the main event because that's still going on, but what about the other earlier events that you were in?
I did. I had some fun. I played in the Six Max one there, which was a lot of fun. Remember now, the WSOP structure is different. Everybody's getting used to all these deep stacks that are running, where you've got a ton of chips to play with. All of the WSOPs are three times the buy-in. So if it's a $2,500 buy-in, you get 7,500 in chips. If it's a $1,000 buy-in, you only get 3,000 in chips. So a lot of different type of playing, a lot of different pushing. They actually, they had the one event that I played in was a 1,000 euro buy-in. You got 3,000 in chips. They were going to run 10 levels the first day. They had two first days, day 1A and 1B. They only made it through 9 levels, and they lost 85% of the field.
Wow.
Yeah. You talk about aggressive play and really throwing the chips out there. Of course, now stop and do the math. You're starting out with a 2550. You've got 3,000 chips in front of you. Maybe you raise it to 150, you make a continuation of 300. That is almost 20% of your chips out there already.
Yep.
I mean, it doesn't take long. If you don't win one of your first couple of hands you get involved in, probably the third hand you're going to be shoving.
Yep. That's why I really don't like those. I played the 1K event a couple of years ago at the WSOP out in Las Vegas, and you know, it's one of those situations where if you get crippled early on, and in one hand, you know, you talk about putting 20% in on the flop. If you then also bet the turn, you could end up with 30 to 40% of your chips in the pot. You lose that, and here you are, you know, in the first level of the tournament, and you're way the short stack, and you're fighting just to get back to a starting stack. It's very, very tough.
It is very, very tough. The other one that I played in was kind of interesting because it was a bounty tournament. Where basically it was that one was in London. See how they all run together?
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, just a different strategy of playing. You play in a bounty tournament. This was a one-for-one bounty tournament, whereas it was $1,000 to enter it and $1,000 on the bounty. Therefore, the bounties, you know, were extremely valuable. And on that one, you're sitting around the table. You had to keep track of the exact count of your opponent's chips, because it made a huge difference. If you had more chips than him, you're much more likely to try and get the all-in. You're much more likely to be willing to race and everything that way. And it was a totally different type of a strategy in that game. All these things are getting different.
Yeah, when you talk about being aware of the other stacks, does that mean that if you've got a hand where you know you're pretty sure you're in the lead here, you're not making a small value bet on the river? You're more likely to try to get it all in there so you can get all of his chips all in there so you can get paid off not just with the chips but also with the bounty? Does that change your river play?
It changes the river play in a lot of ways because what you want to do is collect bounties. So you try to figure out what play it's going to take, whether it's being super aggressive pre-flop or instead of making value bets of being over-aggressive on the river, what will it take to get that other player who has less chips than you to commit all of his chips, to put his bounty at risk? And whatever play it takes to get that action accomplished, that's what you're doing. And it was ridiculous. You literally, almost every hand, somebody was shoving out there. And if you were the shortest stack at the table, there was no reason for you to make a small raise, because I absolutely guarantee before it got back to you, somebody would have shoved in to try and get you to commit your chips.
Wow.
If you were a short stack at the table, you pick a hand, you were going to have it all in. Just
wow.
Almost guaranteed. Yeah, it was a very difficult hand to play.
Very interesting. Now tell me a little bit about Cannes, because I've never been there. Is it like Monte Carlo, because it's such a big resort there on the Mediterranean? Is it really expensive?
It is quite expensive. It's not quite as expensive, not quite as luxurious as Monte Carlo. Monte Carlo was just to the extreme. But Cannes is definitely a step up from most of the resorts you see. Definitely, it's right there on the Riviera. Huge amount of history there. They've been having those film festivals and such for decades and decades. And the hotel that we stayed on was phenomenal. All the pictures on the wall of the people that stayed there. Basically, you name a movie star that you saw, and you could probably find their picture on the wall. I mean, every day from present-day ones back to, you know, Sean Connery to, you know, Elizabeth Taylor to whatever. All of them seem to have spent time there in Cannes and even at the Majestic, the hotel that we stayed at. So it's pretty impressive.
I heard when it came to the poker, though, if you busted out of a tournament, that the cash games weren't all that decent. And more importantly, that the rake, which is something I talked about on last week's show with Bart Hansen and David Tuckman, that players need to be aware of the rake. I heard that the rake in Cannes was ridiculous, like no cap.
There was no cap on it. So if you were playing in a high-stakes game, there's almost no way, there was no positive EV value in it. No matter what, the house was going to make out like a bandit. They raked by percentage. The problem you had in like in a PLO, I talked to Freddie Deebs and a few other people about that. It took them longer to figure out the rake than it did to play the hand.
Because we're used to you play here like in the PLO game that we play here at Harrah's. You know, you get into a big pot. It doesn't matter what the size of the pot is. It's going to be a $4 rake. And that's going to be it. But now they have to figure out 4% of the pot.
Yeah. know, it was horrible. He said, you literally, and he wasn't exactly, it took longer to figure out a rake than it did to play a hand. So you played so few a hand, it was ridiculous. And it was a timed rake.
Oh.
So, you know, so after a while, he just stopped playing. He said, it's ridiculous. He just got up from the table and left. So there's no way you can make any money here.
So there's they're cutting out of the pot and charging you time, both?
There's a lift. It's very small on the time thing. Most of it's out of the pot. But the problem is you're playing three or four hands every half hour, and that's it.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Yes, it was horrible, he said.
Wow. Wow. So. While we're talking about the WSOPE, congratulations to our friend the grinder, Michael Mizrachi, who we're hoping to have on the show in a couple of weeks. He won something over there called Mixed Max. It's a new event at the WSOPE. I've never heard of this at any other place. It was a 10,000 euro buy-in, and the way the Mixed Max works is you start with a full ring. It's kind of like a triple shootout, but you start with a full ring, and if you beat your table, you then go on to the second round, where you play it as a six-max event. And if you win that table, you go to the final round, which is a bracket of 16 players who then break down into heads-up play. And you got to, you know, you play heads-up against this person, and that person next to you is playing a heads-up match, and then you will play against him. And, you know, it works out just like any other sports bracket where it plays down to one person. Have you ever heard of something like that, and would you like to play in a mixed format like that?
I absolutely had not heard of anything like that. I think it was unique for them. I mean, they're doing everything. They've got the all-in or fold one. They've got the Jack and Jill one. Everybody's coming up with a little unique, different twist to it, and I love someone. I think this is a very good one. I like the idea of it. You start out with a full ring, and you work your way down to heads up. Heads up is some of the toughest play, where you've got to be so aggressive, and it's totally different than a full ring. So it brings out more of a player. You know, totally, totally different heads up versus the other one. To have to play both of them within the same tournament is pretty awesome. I love that format. I didn't even realize it was going on.
Of course, so. In order to win that, you've got to play heads up three times, because when you get down to the first table, you have to get heads up with another player. You got to win that. Then you go to six max, and you got to get down to heads up, and you got to win that. And then you just go to just plain heads up, and you got to win that and that and that over and over again until you're the last man standing. And Sean Buchanan was the runner-up, and the grinder beat him. Although, what was the story about the grinder and somebody else who could have played heads up?
Noah Swartz made it to the Final Four, who was one of the best friends of the grinder. They're both from down there in Florida. They both play cash games against each other all the time down there. It would have been phenomenal to have had a, quote, all-Florida final table with a grinder against Noah, but it didn't quite happen. Noah lost, and so the grinder was able to take it down. I'd love to see those two go head to head.
And Sean Buchanan, who came in second in that event, put up enough points at the WSOPE so that he's now in the race for Player of the Year, depending on how he does in the main event and how Ben Lamb does in the November 9, and there are several people who are still in the running there. Well, while you were off in gallivanting around in Cannes and then going off with your girlfriend to Paris, I was in an even more exotic location, Hammond, Indiana, for the World Series of Poker circuit event at the Horseshoe Hammond, which is one of the nicest casinos in America, not just the Midwest, but the entire country. And I played in what is now a record-breaking tournament. The first event at this year's circuit event in Hammond was a re-entry event with days 1A and 1B combined. Dennis, we had a field of 3,001 players. That's the largest, second largest live event I've ever played, and I know you played in bigger ones in the main event, but how about a circuit event that turns out 3,000 people?
Well, it's just phenomenal. Not only if you live in the Midwest, if you live anywhere in the U.S., you should check this casino out, but definitely if you're anywhere around in the Midwest. It's got, I think, 34 or so tables in the poker room, but he runs, a guy by the name of Jason Newman, who we're going to have on here in just a couple of minutes, runs that poker room and runs those tournaments, and it does it such for the players. He set the record last year for the biggest circuit event at 1,800 and I think 69. And then he turns on this year, and he blows it away, and not quite double again. Now he broke 3,000. I don't know what he's going to do for an encore for this thing.
Well, you know what? We've got Jason on the line here. Let's ask him. Jason Newman, the poker room manager from Horseshoe Hammond. Hi, Jason. How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Good. Congratulations on this. How did you turn last year's massive turnout into an even bigger turnout this year?
Well, obviously we have an A1A and B, which was which great with the re-entry option. We give players two barrels to shoot with. In addition, we can accommodate a lot more people, whether it be scheduling or just the fact that we seem to be growing and growing and growing, and you end up running out of space. We promoted it. We promoted the entire event starting in September through free seats to our main, connected with our cash games, with our daily tournaments. We also guaranteed the prize pool, which brings a lot of people out, and the players seem to like that.
Yeah, you guaranteed a prize pool of $500,000, and you blew by it. I think the prize pool reached $900,000, Dennis.
Yeah, we came pretty close to hitting our guarantee on day one alone, which brought a smile to all our faces. It was great.
I bet it did. When you talk about adding seats early on for the month beforehand, were you splashing pots in live games? And explain to our audience how that works.
Well, actually, what we do with our cash games, we have a high card promotion, which is about as simple as it can be. We randomly select one of our cash games six times a day, and the live player is sitting there just simply high card, and the winner gets a main event seat. And we've done that throughout the month of September and leading up until the event started.
How many main event seats did your poker room give away?
In the poker room, the daily tournament winners get a seat as well. In the poker room, before the event even started, we gave away close to 300 seats for our main event coming up on Friday.
Good grief.
And what's the guarantee on that one?
$1.5 million.
Jason, you're doing a phenomenal job. I've heard nothing but positive feedback from the players. They love it. They love the idea that they can get up here and satellite in or free roll into these. Room must have been packed for the last month.
Yeah, we've been slammed. And the balance we want to make sure and try to keep is we take care of our regular players, our cash game players, and our daily tournament players that are here day in, day out, all year long. In addition, now that the tournament has started and we have all these people from all over the Midwest, all over the country, we're also adding main event seats to all the events throughout our circuit, not only the ring events, but our nightly tournaments, our satellites. For instance, any mega or super satellite we run, if the prize pool justifies 9 seats, we're adding 3 seats to every satellite. We're adding the final table. So if you made the final table of event number 1, for instance, all 9 players get a free seat. It's not pulled from the prize pool. And the whole idea of it is to integrate the tournament players, the cash game players, the local players, in addition to the players from all over the country, because as anybody that's been around poker knows, action begets action. If the cash games are good, the tournaments are good. If the tournaments are good, the cash games are good. And we just kind of want to leave our mark as an action-packed poker room.
Well, you've certainly done that, although I was a little bit disappointed because I forgot about something when it came up there. I played on Thursday on day 1A, and I forgot that day 1B would be even more crowded, and you would have to use all of the live game tables in the poker room for tournament tables, which meant that we didn't really get any cash games going until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So, Jason, I was forced to sleep really late on Friday.
Yeah, we do our best. We tend to call that a good problem to have with the turnout. However,
of course.
I'm sure we're already thinking of ways of maybe adding more tables or something next year to hopefully never have to shut down the cash games.
Well, is it possible you're going to go to the 3-day ones on some of these? I mean, or run a double shift of some sort? Or just how are you going to do this?
And that's an interesting question. I feel like the best answer would be hopefully you can get some more tables.
Okay.
If that isn't the case, I would say we're going to go with 3 days just because we really want to accommodate everybody. We want the cash players happy, the tournament players happy, and those tournament players that bust out on one of those day 1A, B, or C, we don't want them to have to wait to get into the cash games. If you bust out, you know, you want to have lunch and immediately get into action.
Yep.
So we're already thinking about that.
But it's hard when 1,000 people are busting out of a tournament in the course of an afternoon and an evening, and the list for the 2-5 game is 175 people long. Doesn't matter how many tables you have. You're just not. Somebody's going to have to wait, and they're going to have to wait for a long time. By the way, for those of you who have never been to the Horseshoe Hammond, I wrote a blog about it on my website, which is harrisonline.com. Tells you how to get there and how good the place is, and about the secret Chinese restaurant inside around the corner from the poker room that not enough people know about. That's pretty cool there. But I also had to write in there, Jason, about how to this day there's still no hotel there. Is there talk about changing that because of the huge amount of business you would bring in from elsewhere? I know you do lots of business with your locals in Chicagoland, but you must want to bring in more people like me and Dennis from out of town with your own hotel. Is there talk about doing that?
There has been talk. I have not heard any confirmation on that. I know that it is something that we obviously have thought about and hope to see in the near future. We do also try to partner up with hotels in downtown Chicago as well as Northwest Indiana to try to get decent rates for the players coming in. And in addition to the decent rates, access on our website that gives you directions and contact numbers so that try to make it as player-friendly as we can, but it is an obstacle when you don't have a hotel at a facility like this.
Wow. I've got a question for you, because it's kind of been the theme of the show so far. We've talked about some of the unique structures, unique ways that people have tried to add a little spice to these tournaments, a Jack and Jill type of a tournament, the one that the WSOP Europe just had where you went from a full ring game down to a six max and down to heads up. Do you have any of those in the future, any of those you thought about implementing into your tournaments up here?
Well, the grinder one that you guys talked about, I was real curious to, when I first saw that on the schedule, I think that it sounds like an amazing event, and I'm going to spend a lot of time talking with probably you, Dennis, and anybody else that was around to see what the feedback was. We also have our Chicago Poker Classic in the spring, and we tend to introduce those new ideas in that tournament, not that we wouldn't introduce it during our circuit event. However, there's also some consistency among the circuits across the board. We're trying to, 12 rings, 12 days. So I guess it's kind of a roundabout answer, but I'm always interested in a new idea that kind of rejuvenates and introduces something that's exciting and fun for all players.
Well, Jason, congratulations on the success of the first half of this circuit event and your main event on Friday. By the way, is that a two-day, and is it a re-entry also like the first event was?
It is. It is a re-entry with day 1A on Friday, day 1B on Saturday. We're giving away seats in all the tournaments leading up to it for the rest of the week, and it has a $1.5 million guaranteed prize pool. So I'm expecting well over 1,000 players. I don't want to quote an exact number, but we know for a fact we're going to knock it out of the ballpark.
So if I go over there tonight to play in your nightly tournament, I have a chance to win a seat at the main event then?
Absolutely. The top, the $150 nightly tournament, the top two finishers, first and second place each, get a main event seat added to the prize pool.
And that's added to, not deducted from the others. That's added to in addition to the prize pool. I hope everybody realizes this. This is a phenomenal deal. You come up here, you could play for a week. Every one of these has positive EV value. You've got a good chance of winning into the main event. You basically, you're free rolling in the main event then.
Right. And any seat that's pulled for the main event on this property is added. Tomorrow we have a stimulus special. It's at noon. It's a one-day event. It's $200 buy-in, with just a regular $200 buy-in tournament. Now, added to that tournament, the final two tables, 18 players are going to get free main event seats added to the prize pool.
Wow. Jason, phenomenal stuff. You're blowing it out there at the Horseshoe Hammond. I had a great time up there. Kudos, by the way, to your staff there who kept things running even when the room was overflowing with people out into the hallway out there. They all kept their heads and did a really good job. So congratulations to you and the WSOPC staff upstairs in the venue who had to take care of huge crowds as well. Congratulations on that. I know Dennis is going to be there all week long, and I'm looking forward to getting back there again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.
That's Jason Newman, who's the poker room manager at the Horseshoe Hammond, which is in northwest Indiana. Northeast Indiana? It's just outside Chicago.
There you go.
I think it might be
Chicago.
Northeast.
You can't miss it.
Exactly. All right, before we take a break here, and then we're joined by Bernard Lee, we've got a couple of other things to talk about, Dennis, one of which is the nominees for this year's Poker Hall of Fame inductees. There will be two people going in. The voting is already closed, but because we didn't have a live show last week, you and I haven't had a chance to talk about this. Let me mention who the nominees are and then get your thoughts on who deserves to be in and who maybe doesn't deserve to be on the list. Annie Duke, Jennifer Harmon, John Juanda, Huck Seed, Barry Greenstein, who, by the way, just about an hour ago bubbled the WSOPE main event. He was short-stacked for a long time and went out on the bubble. So Barry's on the list. Linda Johnson, Marcel Lusk, Jack McClelland, who's the tournament director at the Bellagio, Tom McAvoy, and Scotty Wynn. You may notice that Daniel Negreanu, who was on the list the last couple of years, is not on there, nor is Phil Ivey. That's because they're invoking the 40-year-old rule, the Chip Reese rule. You've got to be at least 40 to go into the Poker Hall of Fame, which I think is a good idea. There will be two of these people inducted into the Poker Hall of Fame on November 9 weekend. What are your thoughts on those nominees?
It's a great list of people. There's no doubt about that. And I guess let me establish my criteria real quick. My criteria is who had the most positive influence on poker. So it would have to be, and you can do a lot of this, Tom McAvoy, the books that he wrote that everybody liked, great. Linda Johnson, how she started out and has been for 30 years promoting poker and such. I'll tell you what, if I had to narrow it down to two, and this is tough, and I have not seen this list before, wow, I'm probably going to go with Barry Greenstein. With what he did with Poker Road, with his reputation, with the donations he's made to such a numerous amount of charities, with the fact that everybody respects Barry and his game. That's all there is to it. And he's been around for so long. I mean, he grounded out in the circuit going through the Midwest day to day into cash games and then made his mark in the tournaments on top of it. Pick the second one. Wow.
Let me just add about Barry. One of the qualifications to get into the Hall of Fame is you have to have played at the highest stakes against the best players in the world.
Yeah.
And I think Barry, having been part of the big games both at the Commerce in Los Angeles and particularly at the Bellagio in Las Vegas, that's it. You have to. I'm looking at the qualifications now. You must have played poker against acknowledged top competition. You must have played for high stakes, played consistently well, gained the respect of peers, and stood the test of time. Non-players, you have to have contributed to the overall growth and success of the game of poker with indelible, positive, and lasting results. I think Barry fits the player qualifications perfectly.
Yeah, I think in this list, as powerful as this list is, Barry is my first choice on the list. And, if you tuned into high stakes poker or something, you know, Barry was likely at the table. Anytime at the Commerce and the cash games or at the Bellagio, yeah. I think Barry has to be one of the two that's picked in there.
All right, well, then let me ask you about four of the people who are on here. Annie Duke, okay. Jennifer Harmon, John Juanda, Huck Seed. Annie with UB and the other three with Full Tilt, does the fact that they were associated with poker sites that have now been involved in scandal, does that disqualify them from being inducted into the Poker Hall of Fame?
If it does, that's wrong. Because I'm flat out telling you, if you were not on the board of directors, if you were not making any of the decisions, if you were just a shareholder, had nothing to do with the policies, and had no knowledge of anything that was going on there, why should you be penalized for that? I do not think that they should be penalized for it. If it comes out that they, you know, if Howard Lederer were on this listing, sorry, he's a friend of mine. I think he had a tremendous positive influence on poker for a long time. Not anymore. I would have to say Howard should not be on this. But the rest of them, if you're talking about John Jawanda, you're talking about Jennifer Harmon, no, if they're eliminated because of that, it's just wrong, in my opinion.
Okay.
So
I would tend to agree with you. I think that there, and I like Annie, and we've had her on the show, and she's, you know, been a good friend of the show. I think that there are still questions about the UB thing that haven't really been answered to everybody's satisfaction, and I think that voters will consider that and not put her into the Poker Hall of Fame. They may not think the same way about Jen, who, of course, has played high stakes at the Bellagio for years and has a bracelet and all the rest. And I don't know that Jawanda, even though he's got multiple bracelets, whether he qualifies yet, or Huck, who's a world champion, whether he qualifies yet. I will tell you one name that's on this list that I'm surprised is on this list, and that's Marcel Lusk, who, while he's a nice guy and a pretty good poker player, Marcel has never even won a bracelet. I would think if you're a player, you would have to have taken down a WPT or an EPT or a WSOP bracelet event to be even considered for the Poker Hall of Fame. Would you agree?
I do agree with that. Again, a nice guy, everything fine, but in this listing, I don't think he quite measures up to several of the others, in my opinion, again. I'll put it this way, and I'll go further if you want me to. I think the second inductee will be a woman.
Linda?
I think the second inductee will be a woman. All right, I'll stop wishy-washing. I'll tell you the truth. Let's just go down the line. Annie Duke had a positive influence on poker. She's tried to step up. You know, she did take a leading role with the poker site there after the
Ultimate
scandal
bet.
And everything. That's the Ultimate Bet. She did go on The Apprentice and bring poker out in front of a lot of people so that they realized what was going on there. She's done a tremendous amount of charity work in the Annie Up for Africa and some of the other things like that. Let's not forget that. She's done a great job there. She's now spearheading the Epic Poker League. Whether it succeeds or not, whether you agree with it or not, it's still a movement that you know needed to be taken and, in theory at least, is a good idea. There's a lot of positive things there about Annie. Jennifer Harmon, as you said, high stakes, played in all of these. You know, how can you object to Jennifer Harmon? You know, she doesn't have a dishonest bone in her body, as far as I'm concerned, and has been a positive influence to it. Linda Johnson, I'm betwixt and between, to be honest about it. I honestly think Barry Greenstein's your number one choice. I think that one of the women will be also selected into it. And, wow, if I had to pick between the three of them, I think it's extremely close, but I probably would go with Jen Harmon.
All right, I'm going to predict that they pick Linda Johnson. Here's
a
woman who...
you could be 100% right.
She's considered the first lady of poker. She's got a bracelet.
Yep.
She ran Card Player. She runs the Card Player Cruises. She helped create the Tournament Directors Association. She organized Poker Gives, a wonderful charitable organization. I think that Linda gets in this year. And we've got a break, but I also have to say another person on this list who will not get in, at least not this year, is Scotty Wynn. Because I think there's still a lot of negative feeling from the way he acted in the 50K 3 years ago.
Yep, I tend to agree with you on that.
All right, we've got to take a break. When we come back, Bernard Lee, who final tabled a circuit event at the Horseshoe Southern Indiana just a week and a half ago, will join us. He's also one of the co-hosts of ESPN's Inside Deal, and we have lots to talk about with him. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips up near Chicago. I'm Paul Harris here near St. Louis at Harris St. Louis on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. Don't forget our podcast. You can get them for free from iTunes or on thechipleader.com.
Kids, are you caught up in that old game of shuffling your debt around and hoping you'll get lucky and win the jackpot? Well, it's time to deal. Mortgage rates are low and savings are high. So stop bluffing and call 800-GRANNY-8 or go to granny8.com. You bet our friendly loan officers make it easy, and we don't have an application fee. So call 800-GRANNY-8 and you'll be holding all the aces.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
Granny8.com.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis. I am Paul Harrah's. My partner is Dennis Phillips. And if you missed our announcement at the beginning of the show, Harrah's St. Louis has the Gateway Poker Classic coming up starting on December 1st. 11 days of tournaments. Tournaments going from the $125 buy-in to the $245 to the $355 to a $565 to the $1,100 main event. 11 days of tournament action. First time we've ever had one outside of the circuit event here in St. Louis. We're looking forward to hosting it here, and we hope you will come and be a part of it. Details soon on the Harrah's website or right now on the Harrah's St. Louis Facebook page. Like it and get all the details and come see us in December. Both Dennis and I will be here. Let's bring in our guest for today, Bernard Lee, who has racked up nearly $2 million in tournament earnings. You know him from his work as the co-host of ESPN's Inside Deal. He's also been a poker columnist for the Boston Herald and ESPN.com and Poker News Daily. He has his own poker radio show in the Boston area. Also does some work with the World Series of Poker Academy. Bernard has had quite a year. In June, he cashed in four WSOP events out at the Rio, including a final table in No Limit Deuce to Seven Lowball. In August, he final tabled the Heartland Poker Tour main event at Turning Stone. And just about a week and a half ago, he made the final table at the WSOP circuit event at the Horseshoe, Southern Indiana. Bernard, welcome back to our final table.
Well, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Always a pleasure to be there, guys.
And congratulations on all of your success. Are you surprised? We were talking earlier with Jason Newman up in Hammond, who's the poker room manager there, where they've had record turnouts. I played in the one last week that had 3,000 people in.
Yeah,
Are you surprised by the growth of live events at the circuit and elsewhere?
No, not at all. Hammond does a great job. They do a real good job promoting their events and making sure that the events are supplemented and really bringing in players. So they do a really good job. I think the circuit events, definitely the re-entry has helped the main event. And, you know, you're also going to some places that are really interested and starving for poker and relishing that opportunity. I went to Bossier for the first main event, the World Series Circuit main event, and played there and was pleasantly surprised at that one. And the Indiana one had a good turnout as well. I think moving the Council Bluffs one to April will definitely have a positive effect for them, because you'll have more people that are interested in gunning for that race to the national championship event. So that'll generate some more interest for the Council Bluffs one. And, of course, all the other ones will probably have some more interest as well because of the re-entries and also the positive attitude that we're getting. And, unfortunately, because of Black Friday, you don't really have much of a choice. If you're going to play, you're going to play live.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned it. This week it's the unhappy anniversary week. 5 years since
right.
the UIGEA and 6 months since Black Friday. Those things are still hanging over us, right, Dennis?
Oh, they are, absolutely. We're still feeling the effects of Black Friday, and still don't know what's going to happen in the future. Who knows what the next 6 months are going to bring? Hopefully some positive, but remains to be seen. Bernard, you were up here last year at Hammond, I think. Didn't you finish third in this event up here?
Yeah, I did. I finished third in the 10,000 event last year, and was a great event. You know, obviously cards go one way or the other. I could have been heads up with somebody, and who knows what could have happened. But it was, you know, TV didn't give it really justice, as it was implied that I was just trying to move up the money ladder. It's kind of hard to move up the money ladder if you don't win a hand, and obviously I did win some hands along the way. But it was a great event. It was a great start to the year for the circuit, and unfortunately I'm going to have to miss it this year because of family obligations. Would definitely love to come back and play in it, but there's always next year, I'm sure.
Speaking of cards, Bernie, you've talked about how you would like to get a card to the Epic Poker League. You almost qualified this year, and if there is a year number two, why is it so important to you to get qualified into that?
You know, I think from my standpoint is that, it was really a bummer for this year. I missed it by 60,000, which is probably one of the bubbles. You know, I mean, I'm sure I'm probably one of the top 20 or so that just missed it. And, you really get an opportunity to play against the best of the best. And we do have that opportunity very often when you're playing in, you know, a 25,000 WPT championship or something along those lines. But really to kind of put your talents up against the best players is always a great opportunity. And to be considered among those 250 top players, I think is a real honor. I'm very happy that with regards to the Global Poker Index, I've been ranked in the top 200 pretty much every single week. It'd be nice to be able to put that feather in my cap that I'm part of the Epic Poker League. I would love to have been part of it in its inaugural year, but what was meant to be wasn't meant to be, and so that's life. And now you just move on to the next year. And I know what I have to do to qualify for that, and I'll do my best to do it again. So we'll see what happens.
Well, what do you think there'll be a season two or beyond for the Epic Poker League, or what changes are they going to have to make maybe to?
It's a great point. There's a lot of money that's being put into this Epic Poker League. My personal opinion would be is that I would find it very, very surprising if they didn't have at least a year or two. They've been putting a lot of money into it. They have a lot of backing. They have a lot of big names who are working on this beyond just the Jeffrey Pollocks and the Annie Dukes. You have a lot of people who are former Olympic sports vice presidents who are working on the TV behind the scenes and the like. And, you're going to need some sponsorship. And as much as online poker was not part of their formula, it definitely could have helped. And also it could have helped in getting more players to play in the events, because obviously $20,000 is not something that, you just pull out of your pocket every single day.
We're talking with Bernard Lee from ESPN's Inside Deal here on the Final Table, Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips. Speaking of ESPN, we found out today that there's going to be a change to the coverage on ESPN of this year's November 9. Dennis, of course, was there for the first one in 08, and they have followed the same format of playing on Saturday and Monday and then having an edited highlight show air on Tuesday. They did that in 08, 09, and 10. Now here in 2011, they're really going to embrace the live streaming thing, and they've just announced that instead of playing on Saturday, November 5th, they're going to start playing on Sunday in the middle of the day on November 6th. They will play down to three. Those final three will come back to finish it on Tuesday evening, and it'll all be covered almost live. I guess near live is the phrase they're using,
because
it's going to be on a 15-minute delay with whole cards on ESPN and ESPN2 and streaming on the various websites as well. I'm curious from both Bernard and Dennis what your reaction is to this.
Well, I'll say it from my side, it is definitely exciting for this to happen, that it's going to be in this scenario. We definitely heard a lot of buzz, obviously, in the internals of ESPN about something along these lines, and it has now become public that this is the scenario that we're going to go Sunday, Tuesday instead of Saturday, Monday. I think it's going to make it very, very interesting. Of course, everyone needs to understand that they will not show the whole cards until the hand is over. And that's, I think, a very important thing. Some people are thinking that, they're going to show the whole cards. Somebody tanks for 15 minutes. Maybe somebody can know what the whole cards are. That's not the case, obviously, as we did see Matt Giannetti tank for 10 minutes. Not to say he was doing that for that reason, but he did tank for a long time. So you never know. But that's obviously not going to be the case. It's real, the one thing that I loved about the aspect of the live poker was you really got to see poker being played in a scenario that Dennis and I experience every single tournament that we play in. What you see on ESPN and what you see in that is really all of the exciting hands, the all-ins, etc., which in all honesty has its place and is very, very exciting because that's the moments that everyone waits for. Sometimes live poker is very, very dragged out, bet, raise, fold, bet, raise, fold, very few flops. But this is the World Series of Poker. The way I can kind of relate it is baseball sometimes during the regular season can drag out a little bit when it's game 97 out of 162. But when you get to the playoffs, there's nothing more exciting than baseball playoff in any sports, and I think that that's really what this is going to come down to. This is for $8.7 million on the line, and it's going to be very exciting when you get down to it.
I like the changes they've made. I think they're going to have the biggest viewership they've ever had. People are going to get online and be able to follow this on either ESPN or ESPN2 with only that 15-minute delay. I like the idea that they're only playing down to three players and then going to day two with the three players. Much, much better setup, I think, than what they had originally. If you look at the break in time-wise from the last couple of years, I think that's a small change that'll have a very positive change into it. I like that idea of it. But the 15 minutes and showing the whole cards and people able to actually see the dynamics of the game, you know, if you're a poker fanatic, you're going to be watching this thing. So much, much better than trying to narrow it down. If you remember, like in my year, when they played down to Peter Eastgate and Ivan Demidov, I think they only showed two hands. The guys played 40 hands, but they only showed two of them.
Right.
So huge thing there. I like the idea, and I like the changes that they have.
Well, I got to tell you, I like it as a person who's in the poker media and as a poker player. I will sit there and I will watch hour after hour of that, but I have to disagree with you, Dennis. I don't think that this is going to be good for the ratings. I think that the average casual viewer is not going to sit there at what Bernard was describing, which is the real pace of poker. You're not going to sit there and watch nothing happen for a long time. And yes, Lon McCarron and Norman Chad and maybe our friend Dave Tuckman or the pros like Antonio and Olivier and Phil, who will be sitting in the booth, they'll be able to add stuff, but it's still going to be very boring to a lot of people who are used to tuning in to watching televised poker where it's, oh, they're playing a hand. Oh, there's strategy involved here. Oh, it's an all-in. Oh, he caught the queen. Whatever it is, that's what people are used to. And I think that we're going to lose a little bit of that casual fan base while we may increase the intense poker lovers fan base. It'll be interesting to see what the numbers turn out to be, but I don't think it's going to be good for ratings.
Well, I think it'll definitely hurt later on. In other words, what I mean by that is that when it first starts at 8 o'clock on Tuesday night, you're going to have a huge, huge number of people. But if this thing drags till 3, 4 in the morning, which it often does, for people who have never seen this and people who have only watched the 2-hour show, I will tell you, and it wasn't last year, it was 2009, there's a picture of me online sleeping literally at 3:30 in the morning because I was out like a light. It was during a 10-15-minute break, and I was so tired that I just couldn't keep my eyes open, and I just took a nap. And it is long, and it will be long, and you know, that's the one time where I will agree with you, Paul. You're going to lose a lot of people if it's going to 1, 2, 3, 4 in the morning. Even though it's exciting going down to three people, it does drag out a little bit. But for the players like myself, for all three of us and probably a lot of your listeners, this is as exciting as it's going to get. For people who have never been to the Penn & Teller Theater, this is what you're going to see. Ironically, I'm going to be there covering it for ESPN. I probably will have it on my laptop as well because I want to see the whole cards. We're not going to see the whole cards when you're sitting there live.
Right.
You know, it's kind of funny, right? I mean, like, it's like the old days. People had transistor radios when they were watching the baseball game because they want to hear what the announcers are saying. And we're going to be sitting there in the audience watching these hands play out, and we're going to be like, God, I wonder what he had. And we're going to have to watch online on ESPN3.com to see what hand he had and be like, oh, wow, he was bluffing or whatever it might be. And what's going to be very interesting is the buzz that's going to go around the whole Penn and Teller Theater 15 minutes after a major hand happened because don't tell me that every single person in that audience will now know what just happened.
Oh, I guarantee it. I guarantee if you've got it in your laptop or on your phone or whatever, and you see those hold cards for some particularly significant hand, everybody around you is going to get it, and then they're going to pass it to everybody else.
Absolutely.
For a little bit, everybody's going to ignore the table.
Right. What's interesting is that when I interviewed some of the players, There were a lot of players that said the dynamics changed very much because of the 30-minute delay back in July, and now, of course, it's only going to be a 15-minute delay. Matt Giannetti saying that he had, you know, had people texting him, whatever the hands might be. A lot of these players had their crew watching. I'm sure there's going to be the exact same situation, and then immediate texts about this is what he had during that hand or whatever it might be. It'll definitely be interesting to see how all of that plays out.
I'm going to go even one further. Dennis, when you were playing at the final table in 08, I was standing or sitting 6 feet away from you. It wasn't an arena like they've got built this year by Maury and his crew. I mean, I was that close to you, and there was no barrier between you and me, just a little stand and a guy running the camera. And, you know, we had a huge crowd of people in the same Cardinals hat and the white shirts and the Broadway Ford logos and all that sort of stuff. But I was only 6 feet away from you. Can you imagine if that were today and I had my iPad and you could come over while two other guys are playing another hand, I motion you to come over to me, and you can look at a hand you were just involved in 15 minutes earlier as it gets online, and you can see what that other guy has that quickly. How much would that change your game?
It absolutely could. The first thing I thought about was one of the problems I had up there on stage is I'd go over to talk to the coach or talk to you or whoever, and I'd forget to turn my mic off.
Right.
And we start talking or analyzing a hand. I go, oh, dang, and I have to go down and turn this thing off. Can you imagine some of the commentary that's going to go when somebody goes over and sees they just got bluffed out of a hand or whatever 15 minutes ago?
Yeah.
They have to be editing these because of cuss words.
Yeah, and Paul, what you just said is actually going to happen. There's no doubt that's going to happen, whether it's an iPad or they don't allow iPads. What, are they not going to allow phones on stage? I mean, maybe they won't. You never know. They might not allow a phone on stage, which actually would make a lot of sense because then it would be very hard for that communication to get over there. But when, you know, we talk to Matt Giannetti, when we talk to Ben Lamb, you'll see it a lot of times when a hand is going on, all of a sudden one of these guys is gone from the table and he's standing up against, you know, with the audience. Why? It's because he's reading his text to see what the hand was that he played 30 minutes ago.
Right.
And so it'll be very interesting to see what Harris does. I think that if they state no electronic equipment is allowed on the stage, that'll eliminate a lot of that because that could slow down play too.
Bernie, we're running out of time here. Before we go, we know that you've got a charity event coming up that you want to plug, and I want to give you an opportunity to do that now.
Well, thanks. I mean, long story short is that the full I started a program called the Full House Charity Program earlier this year, really to kind of give back because I think Dennis can agree that we're very fortunate to be playing poker for a living. So long story short is I've guaranteed that I will be raising and or donating up to $20,000 this year. We're going to be doing an event here in Massachusetts on November 12th. Dennis is gracious enough to be coming into town also for the event, and it's going to be specifically, this one is for Playing It Forward, which gathers old sporting equipment for foreign countries that aren't fortunate enough to have even a soccer ball, and also some rural countries, cities in the United States for the same. So if you are in the Massachusetts area, definitely look into that, as we're going to have that on November 12th. So thanks. I appreciate you allowing me to talk about that. And also listen to my radio show about all the November Niner interviews that we're having, and you can get that off of iTunes just like your show.
That's Bernard Lee, who has his own radio show in the Boston area and online, and is a co-host of ESPN's Inside Deal. Bernie, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your time today.
Well, I appreciate it, guys, anytime.
Thank you.
Sure,
Dennis, before we go, I just have to quickly mention that I did play in that big event up at Hammond last week, and out of that field of 3,001, I did cash, came in 235th place, although at a certain point it occurred to me that it was negative EV for me to stay in the tournament severely short-stacked because of the potential profit in the cash games, which were so juicy in Jason Newman's poker room there at the Horseshoe Hammond. At one point, I actually shoved three times in a row with king high, queen high, and a pair of threes. No one called me on any of them. I showed them each time and told them, I am trying to get out of here because I've got like six big blinds left. Please call me and get me out of here. finally, a guy, and I knew it by doing that, eventually somebody would call me light, which did end up happening a few hands later when I moved in with tens and a guy called me with ace-jack offsuit. He hit a jack on the river. I'm not telling it as a bad beat story, just because at a certain point when you're short stacked in a tournament, when the cash games are so good, unlike the ones you were talking about in Cannes, it's probably better to get out of there and go make real money.
Well, the thing of it is that you have to realize is it takes so long to move up a significant amount in the prize pool that, yes, you either need to double up, need to get a lot of chips in front of you, or you might as well go play the cash game. You're already in the money, so
yeah.
The return isn't very much unless you go through another 100, 150 players.
I played 15 hours of that tournament to make $847. It doesn't take me that long to make that much money in real cash games. All right, we're all out of time. Dennis is going to play in the main event up at Hammond this week and report on it next week. We'll also be joined then by Ty Stewart, one of the chief executives of the World Series of Poker. Until then, I'm Paul Harris at Harris St. Louis. Join us next Tuesday at 3 here on 590 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com and our podcasts on iTunes and thechipleader.com.